I want to say good morning to each one of you. I'm looking out over the audience. I see young and old. I see some that are recent people as far as in attendance here. I see individuals that I love and appreciate. And let me say that I have, you know, Odie leads his sermons with prayer before. I always lead my sermons with a prayer before, but not publicly. I've said privately to myself this morning before I came and even before I got up here that I would preach this lesson in a way that would be encouraging and not discouraging. I'm going to be talking about alcohol. Mostly about wine, but wine is alcohol. I'll be talking a little bit about drugs. And if there are people that you know, people even within this audience, who are struggling with these issues, I would say that I would encourage you to think about what God says. I would tell you to, again, think about what God has recorded in His Word. I want to encourage people to be better people, not to be worse, not to give up. There's an individual in Akron that I baptized in his late 70s. He came from the service. He cursed, and I baptized him. And after that, he cursed. He cursed a little less. He cursed a little bit less. He cursed a little bit less. But every time we got together, he said, "You know, it's a struggle for me. It's hard. I've done it all my life." And yes, it would be difficult for a person like that. I hope and pray that people are not in some serious trouble and situations. We've got serious choices to make in life. And not only alcohol, but other subjects that are serious. I can remember very distinctly when I was in the ninth grade. I really believe that if I had not made the right choice, I would not be standing before you. I would not have gone to Fried Hardeman. I would not have married my wife, Pam, who I met at Fried Hardeman. I would not be a preacher. John would not be here, nor his children. I had to make a choice. I was at the fork of the roads. Early, I had to decide, do I want to follow the crowd? And with me, it was in baseball. I love baseball. I was good at it. But in the ninth grade, I gave it up. Because in the eighth grade, all my friends were talking about alcohol. Going to the beach, I lived in Pensacola. They wanted to party. They had some bananas. I'm not even going to tell you how you can take those bananas and make it hallucinogenic. But you can. And they were doing it. We got some glue and we're going to sniff glue. That's the way people got high back in my day. I decided temptation was too strong. They made fun of me. And no, I'm not going to be around that. And I had a decision to make. I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to sniff glue. I'm not going to use bananas to get high. I'm not going to use whatever. And I made a choice. We have people in here who have made the choice. And I'm sure they are happy for it. Bob and I made a choice. He's taken the New Testament in the evening service. I'm taking the Old Testament this morning. Wine in the Old Testament. You will find that term over and over. You even find it in the New Testament, but I'm dealing with the Old Testament. Wine in the Old Testament. Now today we either think about grape juice or we think about wine, and those are two distinct things. Everybody knows what grape juice is. We all know Welch's. Doesn't matter what brand it is. There's all different kinds. We'll be using some grape juice in the Lord's Supper in just a moment. And we know what wine is. And we know that it's alcoholic. When you hear the word wine, most assume it's alcoholic. And so when you read the Old Testament and you read all these different instances, wine, wine, wine. It's everywhere in the Old Testament. And we assume that it's alcoholic. Some people say, well, it's in the Old Testament. That's not important. We're not under it. We don't live by it. But I'd say, no, no, no. Tune back in with me. We're dealing with the Old Testament. But what sort of things were written for our learning? We, through patience and comfort of the Scriptures, might have hope. We need to study those things. We have the Old Testament in 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 11 as our example. We need to do it. Preacher, you don't know what you're talking about. You never experienced it. You never been around it. I have tasted wine when I was little. I have tasted wine, unfortunately, when I filled in to preach on one occasion. Pam is the only time she's ever tasted wine, was served at the Lord's Supper. But unfortunately, I've been around alcohol more than I would ever have liked. You see, my dad was in the Navy. In Pensacola, in Hawaii, lived with him. But many of his Navy friends, and mostly beer, they'd get together and they would drink. And my dad would drink. And I know how it affected my dad. I didn't have to ask my dad, have you had anything to drink? It changed him. He was a different man, different person. He was easily ready to fly off the handle. Pam and I were going through the restaurant the other day, coming out, and I stopped and spoke to a person. And we had it was a group of people. And we left the restaurant. And I said, Pam, did you notice anything about those people? She said, no, they were friendly. I said, yeah, they were friendly. They were a little bit tipsy, I said. Maybe something like, I don't know exactly what word I used. I said, well, how did you know that? I said, all you had to do is look in your eyes. They were glassy. There was that haze. I recognized it from the time that I was, I guess, 5 or 6 years old. Unfortunately, when my family reunions, when my mom and dad would go to Maryland, there was drinking going on. Have a crab fest. A lot of beer being passed around. When I was a child, I could look in the refrigerator, and it was there. And it wasn't until about the fourth grade that I started going to church. I really didn't know anything about Jesus and about God. And then I started hearing some sermons, and I was in some Bible classes. And I talked to my mom and even to my dad. Well, it was still in our refrigerator. When I got to about the 7th or 8th grade, then it stopped being in my refrigerator. But one day I was walking back from a skating rink and I noticed my dad's car at a bar. So in my formative years, my dad was drinking. And unfortunately, I've been in many bars. Now, listen to me. Don't take it out of context. I didn't realize it 2 years later. But Dad would take and get me a Coke. But it was in a bar. In Hawaii, they had these little machines, and you put a nickel or a dime, I don't remember, a quarter, I think it was a dime was the most. Sometimes you get peanuts, you turn a little knob, you put a dime in, you get some cashews out, pistachios, different kinds of nuts. It was in a bar. Get a Slim Jim. Dad was nice to me. Very nice. But those occasions were in bars. I'm not alone. I'm not saying all this to get sympathy. More than half of all adults have a family history of alcoholism. Somebody in the family is drinking, been drinking. It's prominent. It's all around us. It's on the television. And then the effects of it, 1/4 of emergency room admissions, 1/3 of all suicides are connected with it. More than half of all homicides and incidents of domestic violence are alcohol and drug related. Remember what Jesus said about examine a tree? You can tell what kind of tree it is by its fruit. Look at the tree. Look at the fruit. See the results. Car accidents. Alcohol and drugs. This fentanyl scares me to death. Well, wine, wine, wine. When I read about it in many places in the Old Testament, therefore, if it's in the Old Testament, it's also in the New Testament. Therefore, I can drink alcoholic beverages. Well, let's just see about that. I would say no, no, no. Let's open up our Bibles. Let's look at some instances. But first of all, I'm going to look at some definitions. Not all occurrences of wine in the Old Testament are alcoholic. 11 different words in the Hebrew in the Old Testament. So when we hear wine, we think alcoholic. It's our culture. But if you were going to talk about grape juice in the Old Testament, you use wine. If he's going to use alcohol, you use wine. Both of them came from the grapes. I was surprised to find out that Welch's, when he developed his process to bottle grape juice, he called it unfermented wine. That's how he bottled it. There's one of the bottles, one of the old bottles. Well, he had a problem because he was a preacher, not drinking it, but trying to have fresh grape juice for the Lord's table. And so because of that problem, he had a solution to it, and he found a solution to it. And so we have grape juice today. Wine is used 233 times in the King James Version, and looked at 240 in the New American Standard Bible. Mixed wine, strong drink, 20 times. Wine press or vat, 16 times. Grapes, 77 times. Drunkard, drunkenness, 68 times. Bible has a lot to say about it. The Old Testament has a lot to say about it. But that strong drink in that day is not, it was much weaker than what we have today. Yayin is one of the Hebrew words. 141 times it occurs. In these two instances, it's referring to grape juice. You gather in the wine and the summer fruit and the oil, and you put them in strong storage vessels. Well, when you gather in the fruit, it hasn't had a process to ferment, hadn't had time. You tread wine out of the press. That's grape juice. Same word. These two instances, alcohol. We know by the context. Noah, the very first time we find wine, Genesis 9, verse 20 and 21. He comes out of the ark. Some call it the second fall of man. Noah began farming and planted a vineyard. And he drank of the wine and became drunk. In Psalm 75 and verse 8, the wine that foams is well mixed. The wicked use it. So the context has to determine whether it's alcoholic or non-alcoholic. 40 times the word tirosh is used. New wine, literally still possessed. The juice is still in the grapes. The idea of being fresh. No alcoholic occurrence of this word at all. Kamar, wine, new wine, a thick syrup. One of the ways that they tried to keep and preserve their grape juice was to boil it down and boil it down and boil it down to make a thick syrup. And they would put it in vats. And they'd take those vats and they would put them in salt water or in fresh water, depending on where they were. That word is used. No alcoholic occurrences. Asus, one time in Amos 9, verse 13, the sweet wine. Well, actually, four times it's used, but one time here in Amos. No alcoholic occurrences of this Hebrew word. Raisin cakes, again translated wine in the King James Version. Grape juice could be preserved. It's called a must, and I'm not sure if I got that word spelt right. Seems like there should be an E on the end of it. I'm not sure. It could be kept up to a year. Told the Romans filled it in jars, shut it, and sealed it, and they also immersed it in cold water. Points to consider, modern wine is not our Bible wine. The sugar of grape juice can only ferment to 3 or 4% content of alcohol content. In ancient times, people did everything they could to keep it from fermenting, turning to wine. And of course, that wine, if left on, will turn to vinegar. We do everything today to make it as strong and most intoxicating as we can. We put sugar in it. And I don't know all the processes. But we make it more alcoholic. 10% or greater on modern wine. 1 out of 10 people trying alcohol becomes an alcoholic. Now just think about that. If you never take the first drop drink of alcohol, you will never become an alcoholic. I can tell you that. Israelites, they fermented not only grapes, but also grain. Beer is not mentioned in the Old Testament. You're not going to find that word, but you find this shikar 22 times. And it refers to an alcohol that's made out of grain. And they've even found some of the remains using the pottery sherds. God's truth cannot contradict itself. We have an example of this in Matthew 4, verse 5 through 7. Three times the devil quotes from the Old Testament. Here's this one instance. Take and throw yourself off the pinnacle. You'll be rescued. Jesus says, don't put the Lord your God to the test. Satan's interpretation of the Old Testament did not pass the test. People's use of the Old Testament to use wine and say, to justify wine and say, because it's there in the Old Testament, I can use it, does not pass the test. When we divide the Old Testament passages between alcoholic and those that are non-alcoholic, we quickly learn that God consistently condemned. It's always in a negative connotation that drinking of alcoholic beverages are mentioned. Well, I'll drink wine like they did in the Old Testament or Bible times. Really? They diluted it. Wine was always drunk mixed with water. We call a mixture of wine, although the larger of the components is water, said Plutarch. As much as one part to five parts of water. That's the way they drank it. Drink it when you're happy. Drink it when you're sad. Drink it when you're sociable. Drink it when you're eating. Drink it when you go to bed. Drink it early in the day when you get up. And that's what's being advertised. That's what we hear today. We had our text read for us. Who hath woe? Who hath sorrow? Who hath contentions? Who hath complaints? Who hath woundedness without cause? Who hath redness of eyes? But before our text, it'd be like me calling my son John or my son Alan, my grandchildren, Trey and Seth and Alexa, calling them and telling them in a very specific way, personal way, close way, hear thou, my son, and be wise, and guide thine heart in thy way. Be not among winebibbers, among riotous eaters of flesh, for the drunkard and the glutton shall come to poverty, and drowsiness shall close a man with rags. Before our text, hearken unto your father that begat thee, and despise not, this is King James, thy mother when she is old. Buy the truth and sell it not. Follow the wisdom and instruction and the understanding. The father of the righteous shall greatly rejoice, and he that begets a wise child shall have a joy of him. Thy father and thy mother shall be glad, and she that bare thee shall rejoice. Every godly child in here is bringing joy to your parents. This precedes the warning that we have in Proverbs 23, beginning with verse 29. But also, right before, my son, give me thine heart, and let thine eyes observe my ways. For a whore is a deep ditch, and a strange woman is a narrow pit. She also lies in wait as for prey and increases the transgression among men. How close is fornication and alcohol in the Bible? Right after this, we're warned about the dangers of alcohol. I think a lot in the incestuous relationship with his daughters was caused by alcohol. Those that would say, well, I want to go to the party. I want to go have fun. I want to go to the prom. People sneak it in. They did it in my day. They're doing it today. Is it going to be a party? Are you going to have fun? What's it going to turn out to be? Maybe we ought to say, no, no, no. Who hath woe? Who hath sorrow? I'm going to look at these. I'm going to have to hurry. Woe, seven times on Jesus' lips. Ezekiel, Jeremiah, Isaiah. And here is Solomon saying, you drink alcohol, you're going to have lamentation. People are going to say, woe is me. There's going to be a pity party. Ruinous trouble, calamity. There's going to be sorrow. There's going to be great sorrow. The opposite of joy. Those that drink, they're going to be singing the blues. Sadness, grief. The hangover, the headaches, the agony of the mind, a conscience that's torn and tortured. Contentions in the New American Standard Bible. Strife, fighting, unbridled anger. Angry over every thing and anything. The blame game. I'm going to blame you on this. An uncontrolled temper goes with it. If you've been around it, you know what I'm talking about. In Hawaii, when I lived there, I heard more fightings going over this mountain range that's about 4,000 feet high, the crossover from where I live to get over to Honolulu. Took us about 30 to 45 minutes to go on the pally. Mom would say, let me drive. Dad said, no, I'm all right. Mom would say, no, let me drive. As you can see, there's just a little wall separating. And when he gets up there, I remember looking over the my side in the back, and you couldn't see that wall. All you could see was straight down. Mom recognized the danger. My dad didn't. Babbling in the King James Version. Don't make sense. They just mumble. Can't speak right. They talk on and on. They think they're wise, and by their statements, you know that they're fools. Complaints, New American Standard Bible, moody. They got to get something off their chest. There's no self-control. Wounds without cause, physical wounds, emotional, spiritual wounds, needless and avoidable. Redness of eyes. Eyes that are glassy and bloodshot. And who's going to have that? The answer is they that tarry long at wine and they that go to seek mixed wine. They mixed in the Old Testament their wine with all different kinds of herbs to make it stronger. Here is a sample of just recently in 2019. Archaeologists found traces of marijuana in some of the potsherds in Israel going back a long time ago. So they mixed it, make it more powerful, more hallucinogenic. And here is Solomon's advice. Young people, listen to this advice. Don't even look at it. Look not thou upon the wine when it is red, when it giveth its color in the cup, when it moves itself aright. Yes, it's pretty, it's attractive. We have Moses' example. He didn't enjoy the pleasure of sin for a season. And if you don't heed the advice, there's going to be some consequences. There are going to be some deadly consequences. At the last, it bites like a serpent. It stings like an adder. All those different ways that it could be possible. How many people that you know of have died from the cirrhosis of liver? Thine eyes shall behold strange women, in the King James Version. Women that's not your wife, connected again with fornication and adultery. Thine heart shall utter perverse things. You would say things that you would never say otherwise. It will affect you. You'll be like one that lies down in the midst of the sea. Anybody in here ever gotten motion sick? I had it bad when I was a child. And even today when I'm driving, or if I'm riding, I should say, in the passenger, I'm looking straight forward. If I look over to the side, if I start reading, or I can't do it. Yeah, you're going to be sick. It's going to affect you. Take the motion of that boat, or that ship, as it moves back and forth. Get up there in that crow's nest, in that exaggerated motion. You're going to be very sick. We even have the words of a drunk. They have stricken me, thou shalt say, and I wasn't sick. They have beat me. I didn't feel it. When shall I awake? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands. And when they do awake, I will seek it yet again. It is addictive. Now, I would ask you, as a Christian, as a child of God, thinking about the passage that we have in Galatians 2 and verse 20, I've been crucified with Christ. It's no longer I that lives, but Christ lives in me. Is that the description of a child of God? Do you want all that sorrow, ruinous effect in your life, misery? Just stay away from it. Make the decision. Someone asked me when I was coming in, I told them I was preaching on alcohol. Are you for it or against it? I told them, I said, I've made that decision a long, long time ago. If you haven't made the decision, make it now. If you've been affected by it, if you are imbibing it, I would plead with you, give it up. If not for you, for your children, for your family, for your soul. If you're not a Christian, come and have your sins washed away by hearing, believing, repenting, confessing, and being baptized. You know what the good news is? My dad gave it up. There's a Gary Redford. He owned a bar and drank. Wayne and I would go over to the parties, birthday parties at Wayne's, at Gary's house, with the understanding that the first 20 to 30 minutes of their party, they would not drink. We would leave. Gary is a Christian today. Gave it up. Will you not come? Together we stand and sing.